Hi, I'm Gavin from Running Trips, and this is our podcast, Conversations About Running. Today, Callum and I are joined by Simen Hallahaugen, a 5,000 metre runner from Norway. Simen is 23 and has a 5,000 metre PB of 13:37, which is still 10 seconds slower than his family record, which was set by his grandfather, who also finished 7th at the 1972 Olympic Games in Munich. Today, we chat with Simen about the Norwegian training system, which is very different to how many endurance runners are used to training and has become increasingly popular since the rise of the Ingebrigtsen brothers. Simen talks us through both the what and the why of double threshold days and provides us with some incredible insight into this unique way of training. This is part one of our chat with Simen Hallahaugen. Simen, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Just to kick us off, some people listening are going to know who you are, but just give us a little bit of background on yourself as a runner and just let people know sort of a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, sure. I've been doing running since I was like 10 years old, and combined actually cross-country skiing and running until I was 18 years old, and now I'm 23, so I've been like doing only running for 5 years, and my main distances is distances from 800 to 10k, but my main focus is on the 5k, because my grandfather has a personal record of 13:27, which I'm targeting to take down.
The family record. What year did your grandfather run that?
I think it was in 1973, but he was in the Olympics in 1972 in the Munich Olympics.
Really?
And he actually became seventh. So yeah.
Wow. So he's in that famous race with Prefontaine and.
Yeah, he's on the tail of the
Lassiverian and.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I presume that's a race you've watched that on film many times, have you?
Yeah, I've watched it many, many times. So, like today, you know, we have the dragonflies, we have the the wave lights and everything. So, running his time is probably not good enough anymore, you know. But because running 13:27 with the spikes he used then, I've actually seen them myself. It's very impressive.
It definitely is a different proposition, isn't it, to run 13:20 something in the 70s versus now.
Because the world record wasn't that good at that time.
What was the world record then?
I'm not 100% sure, but it wasn't under 30 minutes. It was more like 13:10 or something, I think.
Is your grandfather a big influence on your running now? When you were growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I think, to be honest, if my grandpa hadn't run like 13:27, I think I probably would have been doing cross-country skiing now.
Really?
It's like, yeah, actually, because taking that family record has been so, it's been my focus since I was like starting running. And I was like very 50-50 if I was going to do cross-country skiing or running. And I actually think that taking that time and BT's personal record was a factor that made it be the running game I was going for.
So in Norway, is that quite a common path to be an endurance runner and a cross-country skier when you're growing up?
Yeah, because like when I was before the Ingebrigtsens, cross-country skiing was the biggest sport in Norway, or it is still the biggest sport in Norway, but every talent in endurance sports was like trying to become cross-country skiers. But now more and more of the talents are preferring to run instead of cross-country skiing. So we see like a change in that now here in Norway, that more and more people are going all in for the running instead of the cross-country skiing.
But yeah, you think the Ingebrigtsens have influenced that?
Yeah, of course. Without the Ingebrigtsens, because the Ingebrigtsen shows us that it's possible to win an Olympic gold medal and come from Norway, you know. So
yeah, I remember there was a part of the what's the documentary series called? Is it Team Ingebrigtsen?
Yeah, that's right.
There was one of the episodes where Gert was giving a speech, and he kind of started his speech with something like Norway's no longer a country only of cross-country skiers. And for, I didn't really understand why it was so controversial, but like somebody in the family didn't want him to say it. And yeah, I just wasn't really sure why that was a controversial thing to say.
Because it's always been like, Yaktis has been like a little bit like tried to irritate the cross-country skiing people with like he says it how it is, you know, he's totally honest, and some cross-country skiers doesn't like that, because in Norway we say that every people from Norway are born with skis on their feet, like cross-country skiing is like so close to the heart of the Norwegian people. So I think maybe...
So is that in the UK countries, like, what would be the equivalent? Like, everyone's born with a bottle of booze in their hand.
With a pint in their hand.
Yeah. Almost. sorry, Simon. Yeah, carry on.
No, that's fine. But, the point is here is that cross-country skiing is a very, very big sport in Norway. And the best guys that are doing cross-country skiing are earning a lot of money. And really? You know, in Great Britain, for example, cross-country skiing is not that big at all.
I'd go as far as to say it almost doesn't exist. Like,
I
think it's often a sport that I thought, oh man, that looks so fun, but just how do you do it around here? And then even there is such a thing as like roller skiing, but even that is extremely niche.
I've never seen anyone do it in the UK, really, like not in person.
No, exactly. Yeah, I know it exists, because when I was long-term injured and knew I wasn't going to be able to run, this is years going back, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? And the only thing that seemed to be motivating was, I was like, you know what, I'd love to do some roller skiing. But then I looked it up, and the nearest club was like 30 miles away, and they were saying it would take so long. There's something like a 10 session beginner program just to learn how to actually do it, and I just thought, oh man, I just want to
that's kind of the problem, you know, coming from Great Britain and have to do roller skiing instead of traditional skiing, you know, it isn't the same. So
okay,
and also Gavin's just said, oh yeah, I was extremely motivated to try something else like cross-country skiing, and then and the prospect of 10 sessions put him off. He was like, nah.
Okay, but do you feel then, well, hang on, one thing we haven't said, you've said that you're aiming for your grandfather's eventually, like you'd like to be the fastest runner from your family. How close are you to that now?
I'm 10 seconds away, but I've been struggling a lot this or at the end of last season after the corona vaccination. I've been struggling with the body, and it still doesn't work very well. So I think it will be hard to take that record this year. Maybe, but we'll see. But I'm going to take it. That's for sure. But it may not be this year, unfortunately.
Okay. So the trouble is as well, Simon, is if let's say you take it this year or next year, how long do you think we'll have that family record until your younger brother comes along and snatches it?
That's so difficult, because he's running faster times than I did at the same age.
Give us a snippet of those times. How old is your brother, and what times is he running?
He's 12 years old and has run the 5K on the road. That's 16:23, so he's pretty fast.
Is he the one who's breaking records and things? And like, there's Fred's. I've seen like some Fred's on like running forums and Twitter and things about like
track. He went a little bit viral this autumn after
I had no idea that
road
was...
race. Yeah, he ran pretty fast at Hitteplan, but he ran faster at the week after on a little more local race. What was your time again, Per August?
$34.40
for 10K.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fast.
And that's the one that got him a little bit of attention on Instagram, wasn't it?
Yeah.
which as we know, is the ultimate judge of how good a runner is.
Yeah.
he's actually he's kind of sad because he's passed my follower record on Instagram. Actually, he's had the twice as followers as I have. So,
what's he at?
He has 8,000 followers, I think. Yeah. Because he didn't have that many until the viral thing, but it blowed up his Instagram, to say it in that way.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect of running that your grandfather never had to worry about.
No, the social media thing.
Is that something you enjoy? Is that something you sort of take? Like, do you see that as actually part of being a runner, or is that just something you do for fun? Is it, you know, do you have sponsorship obligations or anything like that?
A little bit sponsorship obligations, but mostly I do it for fun. Like, I think social media is fun, so I'm not stressing about the post. I don't have that many sponsorships that I have to like post things at that time. It's more like, do it when I want.
So, what is your situation in regards to that? Are you a professional athlete? Are you a student? Do you work?
I was done with school in 2018, like the Norwegian school system, before you getting to study and stuff. And then I had like 3 years completely runner, just nothing else, just like call it a professional running system. But this year I have I'm studying a little bit at the side of the running now.
Okay.
So not only running.
Yeah, something to keep your mind off between training.
Eating and stuff in the autumn. I think that was something actually was very good to have something else to have the focus on, because when you're not able to train what you want, and if you only have the running, then it can be a little bit frustrating, to say it in that way.
Yeah, for sure. So, Callum, what's been your experience of training with Simon? Because you've been on, I presume, how do you two know each other, and how did you end up training together?
Yeah, well, yeah. All right. So I'll tell you how we ended up training together. So I first went to Norway a couple of years ago, and I messaged Simon asking if I knew him just because I literally followed him on Instagram. I followed him on Instagram because I'd been going to and from Norway. My girlfriend lives there and he was a good runner from Norway, so I just followed him on Instagram, saw what training he was doing and stuff like that, and then I messaged him on Instagram if I could come and join him for a few seconds while I was over there, and he just completely left me on red, like completely blanked me.
some crazy English guy just contacted me out of the blue.
It was so much to write in English. I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. Like, if he had called me, I would definitely have answered and stuff. But to write such amount of English.
So anyway, a few weeks later, I entered a race in Norway, and Simon was racing in that race, and I absolutely smashed him in a 1500. And then after that, he messages me going, "Oh yeah, okay, maybe we can train together actually." And I was like, okay.
You earned the right to train with him.
I earned the right, yeah. In I think he had a pretty bad day at that race. In fact, I think we all did. The whole Norwegian training group that we now train with had no one had a good run there. Simon was jogging around.
So yeah, okay, that's an interesting way to introduce the idea of Norwegian training, saying that you all ran pretty rubbishly, because I think the direction this is going to go in is that it's considered quite a successful, and I say unique to us because we don't really know about it. I think it's quite normal the way you train, isn't it, Simon? Like, it's not particularly unique
kind of how I was going to introduce it. I was about to kind of say that right now in the UK, and part of the reason I was quite excited to have Simon on the podcast is because in the UK people are absolutely fascinated by how the Norwegians are training right now, and mainly that's due to the success that Jakob has had, and also is it Blumenfeld, the triathlete? Yeah, yeah. He's obviously doing very well on the world stage. A number of Norwegian athletes
didn't he win the Olympics?
Yeah.
Is that what you class as doing? He's doing pretty well on the world stage.
He's doing all right, isn't he? But yes, to us and to lots of people in the UK right now who are training this way, it's kind of a new way of training. But for Simon, he's obviously, as he's just said, he's been training since he was 10 years old. And from what I know, you've been pretty much training this way for most of your life, haven't you, Simon?
Yeah, almost.
And when I say training this way, the Norwegian training method, you can give us a quick summary of what that is.
Could you almost give us, sometimes when we talk about Kenyan training, we summarize almost like a typical week of training, because it's, although obviously there are individual variations, there's enough similarity to be able to say this is a typical week in the life of a Kenyan runner. Is it possible to do that for a Norwegian runner?
Yeah, of course. First of all, I think it's important to, like, in Norway here, we have a very belief in the threshold training. Like, do a lot of amount of the mileage at a threshold intensity. So, basically, the aim for every runner here in Norway, mostly, is to have the highest amount of mileage at the threshold intensity. Like, because, you know, as a runner, you want to have as much of volume at the highest speed that your body can handle, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for example, El Garush, you know? When he was running, he had, if you have seen a typical training week of Hisham El Garush, you can see that he had so many, so much of his volume was at a very, very high pace, and a lot of intervals, fast intervals. And yeah, it wasn't that much of easy running. And the easy runs he had was very fast as well. They were like 3 flat on the K. So basically the Norwegian system is like, we want to have the highest amount of volume at the highest pace. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you have to train very controlled. Like, because if you're training, like, I don't know how you guys in Britain train, but I have like a picture of it to be maybe controlled in the start of the session, but it gets harder and harder, and you're not that up to threshold intensity. So if you, for example, train your way or the British way with higher intensity at the end of intervals, you wouldn't have been able to train this Norwegian system, because you have to have a lot of intensity control to survive such a high volume with such a large amount of intervals. Because a typical Norwegian guy, like, okay, some guys are doing like just single threshold sessions. Like, some guys are doing that, like Sander Nørstamo and stuff. He's not that up to the double threshold system. But then he has like a, then he maybe have a threshold session it's up to an hour or so, like a very high volume of minutes at the threshold zone. But the Ingebrigtsen system is more like divide those to two, like 30 minutes plus 30 minutes or 35 minutes plus 35 minutes. So
on the same day,
because the body has like, okay, so may, I don't know, but some people have maybe tried to have like interval, say you have 6 intervals a week and you have 7 days a week, it wouldn't be good for the body to have like 6 intervals the 6 first days of the week and then an easy day. It's more beneficial to have like 2 intervals a day, because then the body is like more, you have an kind of a window after the first quality session where the body is open for more intensity.
So, right. can I, can, gets,
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to describe in English, I feel.
Yeah, sure. That's why I just want to make sure now that we're all on the same page, so that the people listening can fully understand as well. So
it's
brilliant. It's brilliant information, but I just want to see if I've understood, and if I've understood, then hopefully the listeners will as well. So in a nutshell, before we get into kind of the day by day, you're saying that there's a big focus on running high volume at, let's call it high intensity, but very controlled intensity.
Very controlled high intensity,
So you're not, and the example that you've given so far is something like 30 minutes worth of intervals AM and also 30 minutes worth of intervals PM.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I was supposed to say.
No. Yeah, in that case, you did. Yeah, that is what you said. Yeah, I was just checking that I'd heard correctly. So can you give a little bit more information as to what that intensity actually is? Because if you use the term threshold, that term can sometimes be thrown around a little bit and can mean slightly different things to different people. Is that something you take quite casually, or is that something that's actually scientifically based and measured?
We're as many of you probably know, we're measuring lactate, you know. So I'm not, that's varied a little bit, but I'm using heart rate monitor as well, and the lactate machine. But lactate machine is more accurate than heart rate, because heart rate is affected of so many other things, like for example the humidity that day, the temperature, how much you have slept. Of course, the lactate is also affected by those things, but in not that big way as the heart rate. The heart rate varies more than the lactate, so that's the reason why we're using lactate.
So what parameters would you be looking for on both of those aspects for lactate and heart rate?
Okay, what kind of lactate we're trying to have?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, first of all, I've done double threshold training since 2018. That was the first time I started with that. And at that point, I wasn't that... The problem with double threshold is if the first threshold session in the morning is a little bit too hard, then you're not fully recovered in the evening, and the chance of getting overtrained is very, very big. So if you're like going to have double threshold, you have to be very very sure that the first threshold of the day isn't too hard, because if that's not threshold, that's become too hard, then you're not recover good enough to the second session. So we try to have I will actually say more that the threshold in the morning is more like a, call it a kind of progressive tempo run kind of thing, that you're not having very high lactates. You're just kind of having the same lactate as you have on the easy run, a little bit higher, but not very much.
When you do your morning threshold, it's probably, I would say, slower than half marathon pace, isn't it?
Actually, I will say that the morning threshold, we try to be around the marathon intensity.
Okay.
Like the lactate you have when you're running a marathon.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to aim for in the morning threshold. But in the evening, we're running
bit harder. Yeah, it's comfortably hard.
Much. Yeah, it's comfortably hard. But it's kind of tough as well, because when your threshold is getting better and better, it becomes harder and harder to run the threshold. Kind of, it's hard to say that in English, but
as you the fitter you become, the harder it is to reach your threshold. The harder you have to push your body to be working at threshold pace. So, for example, world-class half marathon runners, when they're running a half marathon, they're probably running right around threshold effort or threshold pace for a lot of that race. Let's say the final or middle 30 minutes is kind of at their threshold, but their heart rate will be very high, at like probably 92 to 94% of heart rate max, Whereas someone who's newer to running will probably reach, if they'll reach their threshold, maybe at say 85% to 86% of their heart rate max, because they so they reach threshold at an easier effort.
Yeah, sure. Okay, because
that's actually very. I think that was very good description from Callum on that, because you want your training your body to be as efficient as possible. You want your threshold to be as close to your maximum as possible. You know, so for example, for me, I have a threshold that is my heart rate is, when I'm doing threshold, is 92% of my maximum heart rate, for example. And that's kind of that what Callum described here with elite runners, maybe have around that, or maybe someone has higher as well. But an untrained person would probably have been like 80%, 70%, or lower percent of that.
That makes complete sense. But I would never have. I don't think I would have thought about that. So yeah, thanks for that explanation. Yeah. So pretty much just carry on along the same line. So we kind of digressed a little bit after you'd said that the morning threshold is really fairly comfortable. So take us through.
Fairly comfortable and around marathon intensity. And in the evening, we're running a little bit faster. So in the morning thresholds, we're having like, let's say, a marathon intensity, but of course it's getting, we're running faster in the marathon pace because we have like 2K repeats, 3K repeats or something with some rest, you know? So it's faster pace than the marathon pace, but it's the same intensity as a marathon.
Yeah, okay. But is that one of the reasons why you break it into intervals, so that you can run at a faster pace without the actual stress on your body being harder?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
For example, if I was aiming for the 10K, for example, I will probably have done more like tempo runs at the threshold intensity or stuff like that, longer things at threshold intensity. But now when my focus is on the 5K, I'm doing more interval type of system.
So you say you're doing more of an interval type of system, but you actually do pretty much zero tempo runs, right? You don't do any kind of
last year run. I did one tempo run in the week with like 10K at threshold intensity on the treadmill. Yeah. But this year I'm actually going fully in for the 2K repeats Thursday and Tuesday actually.
Which is quite interesting because I know that Gavin works quite closely with a coach who absolutely prioritizes the tempo run as one of the key sessions per week.
Yeah, he does. But this is something that I was waiting to say. I was like, I'm going to wait for an appropriate time to bring this up. And yeah, we may as well do it now. But what I'm hearing though, Callum, is that the idea is extremely similar to what we do.
Okay.
It's gone about in a very different way. But this idea of running at controlled in high volume of controlled intensity is absolutely identical to what we do. And Haynes, my coach Haynes, he calls it true tempo, and it's not a scientific. It's not what we know what he means by that. Like it's not something that would necessarily be applicable to other systems and other groups. But when he tells us we should be running at true tempo, he really means that it's that extremely controlled effort. And he wants us to finish 10 mile runs at a good pace. And we're trying to push the pace as high as we can, but whilst remaining in complete control. And, you know, we should get to 9.5 miles of a 10 mile tempo run. Your body's a bit beat up because you've run hard on tarmac for 9.5 miles, but you should be feeling, you know, really good and still really strong. And I think there's a lot of similarity between that particular. I'm not seeing much similarity across the entire system, but if you just take that
in that isolation,
that training session in isolation seems to have a lot of crossover with what Simon's telling us now.
Definitely.
Which makes me wonder, as an aside, and we'll get back to you specifically, Simon, but what do the longer distance runners in Norway do? Are they still following something which is more interval based, or would they be doing more continuous tempo runs, but with the same idea of control?
I think like the change from interval sessions to tempo session goes about like 5 to 10K. Like if you're for example, if your main distance is 5K and you're not running 10K on the track or yeah, something like that, you're doing mostly intervals. Like the people that are aiming for the 5K as their longest distance, they're doing interval kind of training. But if you're running like 10K, half marathon and longer than that, people are definitely doing tempos. And I think that's necessary to run fast on longer distances than 5K, because you in a competition, you don't have like rest, you don't have like breaks between the sets and stuff. You're doing continuous running. So to train on that, I think, is actually very benefic.
Yeah, for sets.
To do that.
Yeah, for sure. And would they likely still do that as a double day, or does it then become just a tempo run? And
I don't know about that many people that are having like double threshold with that kind of system. I had that last year with one 10K tempo in the morning and 10 times 1K in the evening. But I think mostly the persons that are running longer distances than 5K are doing tempos like a single specific workout, you know, maybe 12K, 16K, I don't know, but
yeah, sure.
But longer stuff at a good intensity, and a tempo type of work, but longer, not just only 10K.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I've got loads of questions, and then I'm also interested to hear Callum's experience of joining you for sort of prolonged training camps and such. But I think what would still be really useful at this point is now just to get a couple of specific examples, and then also if you could give us an overview of what an actual week of training looks like.
Yeah, I can. I can tell you basically my kind of training week.
Yeah, please.
Monday I have like an easy jog, 10 to 12K. In the evening, I have 10K easy and some drills, strides, stretches. I have sprints in the Monday evening. So
actual sprints, like not stride sprints.
No, that's all out sprints. That can Calvin confirm, I think.
Yeah.
Like racing.
Okay.
So, but not very. The problem with doing sprints and doing threshold training is that all studies shows that sprint training is not very well combined with good threshold, you know. But you also want to have that finishing kick in the competition and have a good enough pace and stuff for running. If you're only was doing threshold training, I think you would have been very, very slow. Like, you have to trigger the body with strength training, sprints and stuff like that, to not like you on your race pace as well, you know, like an over pace. I think that's important. The problem with doing sprints and strength training is that it affects the threshold. So that's like the most difficult part with the threshold training system, because you know that the sprints and the strength training is affecting the threshold, but you also know that you have to do sprints and strength training to have the finishing kick in the competitions, and it's important to train over speed. You want to run fast in the 1500, you can't do only threshold. Then you have to like do difficult type of sessions, and you have to have some faster running in there as well, but it affects the threshold and makes your threshold slower, your threshold pace slower. So yeah, that's probably the hardest with this system. To you want to have so many things in a week, but it's not that many days in a week to fill in. So
okay,
but yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, okay. Cool. Yeah. Like, no, that's great. No, that's great. It's brilliant. Yeah. So carry on to Tuesday.
Yeah. So Tuesday morning, I have 5 times 2K. at threshold, like marathon intensity, but yeah, not much over two in lactate. Like, it's very controlled stuff, because you want to have a good amount of running at the high pace, but you also want to be good recovered in the evening. And that's
before you go on, Simon, mm-hmm. just very quickly, I know when you talk about the rest of the week, I think you're probably going to give us more lactate figures about what you measure in certain sessions and things like that. People in the UK are very much not used to measuring lactate. It's quite a new thing that's kind of appearing right now. Could you give us a very brief overview of what do the figures mean when you measure lactate? Yeah. What are you actually looking for?
Okay, so to say in an easy way, what lactate is helping you with, like when you're taking a blood sample and taking a lactate sample, you can see how much stress it is on the body. Like, you can see how hard you're working. Like, how much... the higher the lactate is, the harder the body is working, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a way to see how much the body is working.
How much effort is going into a session.
Yeah, yes. How much effort do you have in that session? And when I was starting to run, like, or starting to take the lactate samples and stuff, I was like 15, 16 years old. Then everybody thought, or I thought, and my family thought back then, that threshold, as long as you're under 4 millimol, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the exact word in English, but mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. long as you was under that, it was okay. You know, you was at your threshold intensity. But the more I've trained since then, especially the last 2 years, I've noticed that my threshold lactate is lower than more than running, you know? So when I'm running, when I've done like 2 months of a lot of training and stuff, my threshold lactate goes down, not the pace, but the lactate, the threshold lactate.
Yeah.
So I can't go there and say, I want to hit that exactly lactate, because your threshold lactate is also varying because by many factors, how much you have eaten and how much you have trained the last period. So the threshold lactate isn't an exact number. It varies from people to people, you know?
So that's definitely a difference between, Callum's completely right to say it's not commonly used here, but when it is, they go to a lab, they get tested on a treadmill and they get given, this is your pace at 2 millimole, this is your pace at 4 millimole. And then they just go, right, okay, for me, 4 millimole equates to 320 per K, just for example. So then they just do all their threshold training at 320 per K. My experience is that that's how it's used in the UK. So are you saying that's completely different to how you're sort of interpreting these numbers and how you're using them?
Yeah, definitely. Because as I said, the lactate, the threshold lactate varies. It isn't a stable factor, you know, it varies a lot. So if I would have trained like, okay, say I was going to the lab and found out that my threshold, that I can run like 20 kilometers per hour at 3.5 in millimol, for example, I couldn't have just gone out and run that pace all the time, because maybe until that, I've not trained that much before the test, and then your threshold lactate is probably a little bit higher than if you were training a lot before and stuff. So you can't actually run your threshold training on the exact pace, because the threshold varies from day to day. It's affected by so many things, like how much you have slept and stuff
like
that.
Do you find your threshold is, you're talking about morning AM and PM sessions as well. Is your threshold effort or threshold pace or the readings you get from when you measure your lactate, do you find that they're different in the morning and evening?
Yeah, definitely. I would, like when my body's, is normal in normal condition, I'm running faster in the evening. Like here in my home, we're and mom and and grandpa are always saying like you run 5 seconds faster in the evening than in the morning. Like
okay.
Yeah, per K. So let's say if I was doing 1K reps in the morning, I would have had to run like 3 flat on the K reps to have the same intensity as 2:55 in the evening.
Right.
Probably. That, yeah, that's so, not so, like it's not a...
No, it doesn't sound dramatic. I mean. Yeah, it doesn't sound dramatic. But if you were then to force yourself to run 2:55 in the morning... Then you've gone too hard.
And I would have not recovered to the evening session. Then we have a ball that that's not good.
Yeah.
You will get overtrained if you're. That's the problem because some cross country skiers here in Norway have tried our system, like the running system with double threshold and stuff, but they have they have run too hard in the morning. And they don't recover good enough to the evening and they get overtrained.
Mm.
Like, yeah.
Okay. I
think we were Tuesday
yeah,
morning.
We've only made it to Tuesday because there's so many, there's so many sort of fascinating subtopics to delve into. But
I tried to explain it as good as I can, but you know.
In fact, I don't think did we even make Tuesday evening? We only made Tuesday morning.
No, we didn't. So in the evening we have 25 400s. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 30 seconds recovery.
30 seconds recovery or a little bit more. That varies, but some have more. But I'm stick to the 30 seconds.
Yeah, so long controlled reps in the morning, shorter, faster, but still controlled reps in the evening.
Yeah, still controlled. Like,
okay.
I actually won't call that workout a threshold workout. It is a threshold workout by the intensity of lactate and stuff, but you're not running your threshold pace, you know, because you can run fast on 25 times 400 with 30 seconds rest and still be at threshold intensity.
Yeah,
you're
sure.
Running faster pace. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
What kind of times are you running for that session?
67 to 66. So a little bit slower than my 5K race pace.
Yeah, I'm measuring
when I'm in really really good shape, I can be very close to the 5K race shape, and then I try to measure above. Under 3.5 in millimole. So not very hard at that either. But it's harder than in the morning. You're working with two different systems because in the morning you're doing like you're working with the fat system, like your fat energy system.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of you're using fat instead of carbs when you're running at if you're under 2.0 in millimole. You're running with fat. I don't know that's the right thing to say, but you're working.
Yeah,
you're not using carbs that much. Carbs you're using the fat system. But when you're reaching above 2 in millimole, you're starting to work with the carb system. So you're kind of working with two different systems in the evening and in the morning. So it's not identical workouts.
No.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, of course.
You're triggering two different systems.
Mm,
yeah. And I guess the point of those shorter reps with recovery is that you're still getting a very large amount of aerobic work in the evening, but it's at a very a pace that's very specific to you. So you said you're getting quite close to 5K race pace. So you're able to get 25 times 400. You're able to get 10K worth of aerobic training at 5K race pace, which you couldn't really do in any other way. You couldn't do that in a tempo run, obviously.
No, that would have been too hard. And so, like, when we're doing it, we're not thinking that much about it, but it's actually a quite specific 5K workout, you know, with, of course, you're having the breaks and stuff, but it's the better you get, you're getting, the better you are getting on that workout, the more specific the workout is
because you're able to get closer to 5K race pace while still maintaining that control and the lower lactate reading. Right.
Right. We're never going to get through a week here. So let's go to Wednesday.
Okay. Now Wednesday is basically the same as Monday, but I'm not doing sprints in the evening. Then I'm just doing chill training, easy jog.
Yeah. So two short easy runs.
Two easy jogs. Yeah. And
when Thursday you say jogs, sorry, I know it's everybody needs to move through the week, but how easy is easy?
Easy is very, very easy. Like, let's say
your heart rate
threshold. Yeah, let's say when I'm doing my threshold, I have I can run with around 195 in heart rate pulse, you know. Mm-hmm. But in the easy runs, I try to be not higher than 145. So it's 50 beats under that.
So it's fairly standard fairly standard across distance running as an easy run then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's important that it's like if you're pushing the easy runs in this system, you're getting, you will get trouble. So it's very important that you're running controlled when you are doing controlled training as easy jumps and stuff, because if they're going too fast, then you get to trouble the next morning and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Thursday,
that is the same as Tuesday morning, 5 times 2K and same intensity and stuff. And in the evening, it is 10 times 1K.
Okay.
So, and the intensity on the 10 times 1K is approximately the same as the 400s, maybe a little bit less. Not that, let's say around 3 in lactate instead of 3.5.
Yeah. So, but then across Tuesday and Thursday, you've done 40Ks worth of quality running.
Yeah.
That's a lot, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah.
It's kind of. But I know people that are doing more as well, because actually in this system, I'm doing a fairly amount of easy runs compared to many other persons, because I run like around 180 to 190K a week. And there are people that are having the same amount of threshold training as I have. Mm-hmm. But they have less volume at the easy runs.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm actually having a fair amount of easy runs.
So your percentage of hard work is actually lower than theirs as a percentage of your total.
Yeah, I would say that.
Mm. So that's interesting.
That for me in the future, not now, but in the future when I've trained this for a little period to have more of the training in the threshold intensity. But then I can't like train more, and you will probably come to a place here where your risk of injury is getting too high, so I have to maybe run less at the easy runs if I want to run more in the threshold intensity. But
I mean that in itself. I know we're talking about two completely different systems here, but so I don't. My background, Simon, is I used to coach with Renata Canova. I don't know if you know Canova.
Okay.
So yeah. For 4 years, I was with Canova in the 10. What you've just described there fits perfectly with his ideas that as the athlete becomes more experienced, basically as you move through your career. The idea is that the percentage of specific training increases, and the value of the slower easy running becomes less important, and it's important to then increase the percentage of running that you do at a more specific intensity. So just that casual idea that you just threw out fits very closely with what we would have done in that system.
Yeah, and actually, what
I was going to say to Gavin, how much quality were those guys doing in terms of percentage of their?
It would be very difficult to compare to what Simon's saying, because overall it's a very different way of going about things. But just there are certain aspects that are coming up where it's like, yeah, okay, that's the same idea. It's a right. different way. It's a different way of achieving it. But the objective and the almost the philosophy is actually very, very much overlapping.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In terms of the, like the control and intensity discipline.
Yeah. And yes. And aspects such as what I just mentioned there, like, yeah, that yeah. as you move through your career, like if you took,
yeah,
if
sure.
you took a, yeah, if you took a young athlete, their percentage of easy running would be much higher. And then if you yeah. took an experienced athlete or a very high level athlete, their yeah. percentage of easy running would be lower.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Makes sense.
So the Friday I have only one running sesh. So 10 to 12K easy running in the morning and some strength work. In the Saturday, we have a typical Norwegian workout that's become more and more popular the last years. We have like 200 meter uphill intervals. So I have like 10 to 12 times, 2 times 200 uphill with 70 seconds rest.
Yeah, so two sets, so you're doing 20 to 24 in total.
Yeah, 20 to yeah. 24 in total and 70 seconds rest and a little set recovery break at 3 to 5 minutes.
So yeah. this session's a little bit different to the four others you've described so far in that you kind of...
This is a harder session. This is like a session where you can work up to 10 millimol in lactate.
Yeah, so you're pushing this one quite hard.
It's quite hard, yeah.
And then Saturday evening is my favorite one, is the outwash.
The what? The outwash, yeah.
Yeah, so, the outwash. Yeah. You can describe it, go on.
Is that a Norwegian word, or am I just not understanding what you're saying?
So it's yeah, Simon, you describe it, go on.
No, it's kind of outwash, like it's, you can do like an easy run, you know, at the evening probably most of the people would have done like an easy jog, and the effect of an easy jog is probably the same as the effect of this this outwash, as we call it, Callum and I. But the thing with this session, we have like six times 1K with a little less break than at the Thursday evening. Like Thursday evening, we have like 1 minute break. But this session, we have like 45 seconds rest. And the reason to that is to have it even more sure that we're not running too hard in this session. This session is actually going to be more controlled than the morning threshold at Tuesday and Thursday.
Okay.
So it's actually even more control than marathon intensity. But we're actually running pretty fast and well as well. And we get 6 times 1K at a pretty solid pace. But our lactate and the body isn't working a lot. It's actually, the lactate is actually the same as if I've done an easy jog. But because of the...
Yeah, because of the brakes. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because of the brakes, you're able to run pretty fast as well.
Okay. Sunday.
So, yeah, it's...
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay. Yeah, okay. No, sorry,
yeah,
sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I can describe like the reason we're doing that instead of an easy jog is to get, as I said earlier here, to have the highest amount of volume at a high pace, you know?
Yeah,
you want to get your body as efficient as possible.
So Callum, why was that your favorite session?
Pretty much for those reasons, just because you can run fast and it feels so easy. Like like Simon said, the lactate is so low that the effort on the body is not that high. But we were running, yeah, I think we had a pretty hard session in the morning, and then we were running like 3:05 per K for each K rep, which is obviously pretty fast, but it just feels like you finish the session and feel like, yeah, you feel the same as how you would feel after an easy run, really. The reason we're calling it outwash, I think Simon's about to describe, is because it kind of, I think it's...
You're kind of getting out the lactate of the body.
Yeah, okay, I wondered, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of flushing
the lactate out of the body. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So some people use recovery boots or a massage,
yeah,
but you use 6x1K.
Yeah,
or an easy jog. I'm not doing 6 times the K all time of the year, but in a base week, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But to be honest, actually, to take an easy jog, like if I was going to do a race the weekend after, I would probably have done an if to like get fresh the freshest to that race, I would probably have done just an easy jog, because you're with the outwash, you kind of you're getting good legs and feel good and stuff like that, but you're doing kind of a compromise because you want to have higher volume at a good intensity. So
you're still stressing the body in other ways.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
yeah,
it's not an easy run, but it's
easy
run lactate.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, Sunday, I have a 20 to 25K long run. Yeah. So the same intensity as the easy runs earlier in the week, but, you know, longer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you're building some fatigue via the duration, but it's still a low intensity.
Yeah, it's very... It's not like... You can't compare my long run to a typical high school long run in the United States, for example, where everybody
is
throwing off the shirt and doing doing all out at the end. This is a controlled long run.
Mm.
Just easy run in a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that is utterly fascinating. And even though I already had a little bit of information myself on this and having spoken to Callum a little bit, it's still different to kind of how I realized it was. And I mean, Callum, I've got so many questions that it's making me think. I mean, we've already been going almost an hour. I don't think we're going to do this justice by trying to cram in all the follow-up questions now in 5 or 10 minutes. And this feels to me like we now need a second episode at some point to follow up. And I've got all kinds of questions in terms of, where does this come from? What are the influences that have led to this? What impacts do you two feel that it's had? Because it's all very well talking about this system, but without some information, we don't really have any
anything to back it up.
Yeah, exactly. Have the results in Norway actually improved since this has been going on?
So I
want to ask some questions about, like you said, Callum, this has become a little bit of almost a fad in the UK. I don't want to use it. That's the wrong term to use, but what's a better term to use? It's popular in the UK, but I wonder if it's based on a very limited understanding of the system as a whole, and then whether bringing in certain aspects of it is going to be effective. Like, is it something you need to do the whole system rather than just go, oh, it's Tuesday, therefore I'm going to do a double day?
Yeah. I think people need to hear what Simon has to say on this system, because I think people are at the moment, it looks really cool when you post about it on Strava and Instagram, like, oh, I did a double threshold session day. But I think people are about to start doing it wrong. And I think people need to listen to Simon.
Unless Simon thinks, no, this is really good. Why would I want the Brits to learn about it? Let them screw it up. And
yeah, no, I think what we have here is a good.
No, but like everybody would have screwed this system up. If, like, the key thing here is to do it controlled enough. You have to have a controlled enough. It almost can't be controlled enough. You know.
Yeah, sure, it's, sure. You're better off going too slow than too fast.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I
because if
as a brief overview of how that is actually the case, I made this exact mistake when I first started training with these guys kind of for a prolonged period of time. I came to Norway and, pretty much just threw myself into their training. So I just said, I'll do whatever you guys are doing. And the first session we did was, we did the easy threshold kind of stuff in the morning, and then I did 10 times, I think I actually did 8 times 1k with these guys on the road. One of the guys we trained with at the time was Ferdinand Simon, who he's ran 3:36 for 1500, is that right?
3:37 and 7:44 on the 3k.
So this guy
3:37.
Yeah, so this guy is clearly much better than I am, and I was I'm going to use the word beating. I was beating him in a training session. I was thinking, oh, I'm in such good shape. I'm absolutely smashing it. This is great. And then I managed to put probably 3 weeks of that training together where I was like, it still felt pretty controlled. And for me at the time, the word controlled meant you're not on the floor.
Yeah,
the
you're not dying. Yeah, yeah, sure.
You're not in complete agony. Controlled meant I could still stand on. And that's how I felt at the end of the sessions. And yeah, I put together three pretty solid weeks. And then at the end of the third week, I was just absolutely destroyed. I had to take a week of easy training, rebuild, get back into it. And yeah, so I think that kind of sums up, like, I think what a lot of people will find with this is that it feels great for a little while, but then if you don't take it like really genuinely controlled, yeah, it can backfire. But yeah, I think what we have here is a very good understanding of now what that, if it's okay with you, Simon, I think we'd love to have you back on at some point. Yeah, throw some follow-up questions your way, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. I won't be surprised if we get follow-up questions sent in as well once people have listened to this. So yeah, we'll do a follow-up episode pretty shortly, if that's okay with you, Simon, so we can keep the momentum going. Awesome. Yeah. So what day is it? Nice. It's Thursday. So you got reps in a couple of hours time then, have you?
I got reps, you know.
what have you got tonight? 10 by 10 by a K?
10 by 1K, yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Enjoy.
That's the evening session. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And yeah, that's giving us a lot of food for thought, and we'll catch up again shortly with a follow up.
Nice. Cool. See you later, guys.
Cool. Nice. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to part one of our chat with Simon. We'll be back with part two shortly. And in the meantime, you can check out Simon's Instagram, which is at Simon Haller. Conversations About Running is the podcast from Running Trips. We are the people behind Kenya Experience, the immersive running camp in Iteng, Kenya, as well as training focus camps, weekend training camps for competitive runners of all levels. For more information, please visit www.runningtrips.co.uk, where you can learn all about Kenya Experience and training focus camps. Thanks for listening, and happy running.